time.
What being connected electronically can do.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us tonight. We are going to stand and be led in the pledge by Glenn Schmidt.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks for everybody for attending tonight. The consent agendas before you, which includes the approval of the agenda, the approval of the minutes from May 25th, and our next meeting is July 27th. I would accept a motion for the consent agenda.
So moved.
Dave Gary, can I have a second, please?
Second.
Okay, thank you. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Is there anybody that's opposed to that? Thank you. Are there any public comments? I can't tell if there's any public aside from the board here tonight. I'm not hearing anything. Okay, well, let's jump down to the board business. Mr. Dave Gary, could you give us an update on the facilities?
I can.
Thank you.
The facility committee meets at least twice monthly and more as necessary. We're on schedule right now. I know that the question that's on everybody's mind is how much is this going to cost? And we can't answer that one until August, which gets us far enough into the project where we can actually cost it out and get our maximum guaranteed price. So between now and then, the committee just will continue design until they've got it to the point where it can be costed. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay, any questions for Dave? Dave, thank you and your committee for what you're doing. We appreciate your service there. Curtis Roberts, will you give us an update on the drug and alcohol policy?
Yes, I will. I'm going to come up here so I can see everybody's faces. The state of Utah periodically does their own examination, is what it's called, of our drug and alcohol. They have some oversight because we receive money from them. Theirs is more intense than our training or review. For whatever reason, they think that it should be that intense. And so we went through the examination. As a result of that, you're going to get a flavor for how detailed they get. So I'm just going to go through the three things that they found in our policy, which they mandated in official communication that we bring back to the board for official adoptance. So the first thing you'll see here under zero tolerance, this area that's highlighted was previously unbolded. They demanded that we bold it. And so we have bolded it in accordance with their requirements.
This is no joke.
No, I understand. Yeah. It's just, it's so.
There was a change to a website. And they brought to our attention that the website had changed and they want you to approve that. So we've updated that website. And then the last one. This area was bolded, and they demanded that we have done it. So that's the extent of the changes that they demanded. And so in accordance with their requirements, we're now bringing it back to the board to adopt this policy, which then we will have all of our employees acknowledge that we have updated these three pieces and make sure that they understand the critical nature of these updates. So, any questions?
Do we need a motion?
Yeah,
I would move that we accept the changes that's been outlined.
I'll second it.
Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor of that?
Aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay. Curtis, now that we're a dry organization, maybe we better talk about market wage adjustment.
This one's
going to
be a little bit more serious. And many of you remember that we were here last year, mid-year, and we've noticed some changes in the market, and we're back. And I want to outline what we're currently seeing. So this one's not new to anybody. Everybody's struggling to hire. Probably monitor trainer unemployment rate right now is 1.7% for our county. We are the third lowest in the state. There's only two of the county. One's 1.6, so no, both of them are 1.6 now. So you've seen the for hire signs out there. I think we're all familiar with them. There's still new places that are hiring. And some of them are a little ways off. Costco just broke ground, but the FedEx building is coming on, their distribution center. Both of those are down by Gosner's area on 10th West. So there's employment challenges throughout the valley. So this is where we stand currently. We are functioning at a level, and we've been at this level for a while, where we're not operating full Saturday service. We don't have enough drivers. We're not capable of meeting that level. So instead of going around every 30 minutes, it's going every hour. That's just where we're at. And then, in addition to that, occasionally, I'm not going to say this is like a commonplace every day, but occasionally, we're actually dropping frequency on the loop where we drop a bus off, and so the bus comes instead of every, it's now taking up 20 to 30 minutes longer than a person is there waiting. So those are the toolkits that we've implemented just because of our staffing. For drivers.
So you're saying just on Saturday we're reduced to 60 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Just you're not running Saturday service on weekdays?
No. Just on Saturdays we're running, instead of running every 30 minutes, we're running every 60 minutes.
And the bus driver's just sitting at the transit?
No, they interline. So we have different routes. So for example, if somebody's running route 1 at the top of the hour, they may run route 5 at the bottom. Jody would be able to explain exactly which ones are in line. But no, they just alternate which route they do. But any one route will only be serviced every 60 minutes.
And that loop is all week long?
The loop goes up 6 days a week.
But is that loop delay on just Saturdays?
No, that can happen on any particular day where we're down on the drivers. That's when the frequency gets cut.
But as Curtis said, that's occasional. It's not all the time, but it does happen occasionally.
It's just one of those areas where that's where we're adjusting the service version. Here, you can see that our baseline number of drivers is 73. That's what we figure we need to get to where we can do sustained service. We're currently functioning right at 66, and that's just with what we're doing currently. So when we drop below, that's when we dip into the loop service and cuts and stuff like that. Now, historically, we can tell you that we're going to lose drivers over the course of the next 6 months. We know they're going to leave. They're going to go someplace. And what we've mapped out here is kind of our approximate path of where we anticipate our numbers of drivers are heading based off of recent trends.
Why do you need the loop like that for those months?
Right down here?
Yeah.
What we're anticipating, there will be some that we've got out currently on leave, okay, that aren't going to come back. And so we were anticipating them coming back in is right around this time frame, and we won't get them. And then we know that we're just going off of historical patterns. We don't see any reason to doubt where the history is leading us. Is we just tend to trend down right in that time frame.
Is that recent history? Because we had a lot of people during COVID who went on leave and retired or didn't come back.
Exactly. No, this is long-term trends. We're going back over the last 8-9 years. It just is our
trend. Because I thought usually when school started, you had a bump in drivers because you had kids that were, that could.
Yeah, there's a lot of times when we can get people coming back in and applying.
This is with the assumption of no new drivers?
Correct.
Pretty much. So but there is some assumption of where our current hiring patterns are going, which is what this slide is indicative. And so these two kind of go together. So you'll see back here in 20, this is kind of more indicative of where our hiring patterns used to be in the spring months. Last year we came in and said we noticed a drop. Well, this year, this number looks really pretty good. Until you realize, we knew that we were facing challenges, and so we changed the way that we market to people, and we have much more of an online presence. And we actually are to the point where we allow people to fill out an application completely online, they don't have to come in. In fact, we're to the point where we actually offer for them to schedule their own interview to come meet with us preliminary. So without even going through their resume, they can go through and schedule a preliminary interview to come in and see if we can even get them into the door. This is because we're aggressively competing with the rest of the market for that 1.6%. And so what's happened is we have a small decline here, but if you look at the number of spam and the number of unqualified applicants that we're getting, so those that are maybe 18, 19, not 21, so they can't even qualify for CDL, those type of things, we lose 21 of those, so our applicant pool over the course of this same time frame is only 30.
So you're saying spam are the people that might be on unemployment and want just without an application just to say they can have applications? Or?
No, spam is literally ones where we can go through and we show that they were actually done by somebody impersonating somebody else. Okay. They don't show up. And we've had a variety of those, some of them are kind of comical. But the sad part is, these are just ones where somebody is filling out the application falsely. It's not even a valid application.
So why do they do that? I experience that a lot. With drivers that they apply and they schedule an appointment, they never show up. We call it ghostiness. You're saying that somebody else is filling it out? That's a different person?
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that one yet.
One example I find comical, I don't mean to make this comical, but we had an application from Muhammad Ali.
Oh my God.
So that's the type of stuff. That's a type of what we would put into the spam. If they schedule an interview and not show up, we're still considering those as part of our applicant pool. This is only those ones that are clearly some sort of fictitious thing. We don't expect them to show up, and this is clearly an unqualified applicant. So the ones that ghost us are actually inside this 30 remaining. That's the real sad part about this. Our applicant pool has dropped way down. And this is why we felt like we needed to come back and just present these facts of what we're seeing. And where we kind of see the trends go. So when we talk about, can I feel that driver shortage, this is kind of a hard reality to deal with and say, yeah, with confidence, I can stand here and say we can feel it. Other things that we've seen just over the course of the last 6 months, just to give you a kind of a flavor, we have lost 12 part-time employees. We've lost 2 full-time employees. And the ones that are the bigger hit for us, we reported that our HR manager, Nicole, left. And we also lost one of our office supervisors that was over compliance. Both of those took higher paying jobs within the valley. And so we're feeling the pressure, not just at the driver level, but it's starting to branch itself out. And so we're starting to face some real challenges. So this comes back to labor costs. And what we're seeing inside the data is that wages are continuing to increase. Now last year we came in, we showed you several examples of what wages were. We figured we'd take that and we'd expand it upon it. We have been working on this up until 3:30 today. Just trying to get the best, latest information that we can of what's happening. So for example, last year, Shriver's was going aggressively after people for different types of jobs, and they were offering a wage match plus $1.50. Right now, their current range for these type of competing workers, we're not necessarily even calling them the skilled labor, we're just calling what the pool is we're competing against for drivers specifically. So you can see they'll start you out totally, you don't know anything, will come in and they can still pay them $19 an hour. Some of the other interesting ones, JBS, we presented last year at $18.50, they're up at $20, plus that they'll start people at depending on what they bring to the table. Gosser Foods is, I think what's interesting from our point of view that we brought up is we went back through and found the wages that we had come up with in 2021. And this one does go back to 2020. We apologize about that. We couldn't find the 2021 data. But you can see just the increases that people are going through. Even the school district, they just published that they went up to $21.70 for their bus drivers from $20 last year. So just an example of what wages are doing in a cross-section of competing markets that we're going against. Another indicator, we know these are our private employer jobs, so we compared to what some of the other local governments are doing. So we reached out, Todd meets with city managers on a regular basis. We reached out to a lot of those. We've reviewed budgets documents. This is just a smattering of indicators of what some of the local governments around here are doing that we could work through and get information from.
Well, it's 20%.
We're just reporting what we've done. I mean, it's really kind of interesting how different cities are presenting this in different ways, and mm-hmm. we're just trying to gather the information of what they're doing and kind of give a flavor. This is what we're trying to compete with. And so, as with anything, we don't come here just to complain. We try to do our research, and so we started doing a lot of market research. We went through and because we felt like we needed to get a better understanding, we actually bought into salary.com's paid version, so we could actually extrapolate market data from them. We've used their information and then taken the closest market that they pull off regularly is Ogden, and then we took and compared Ogden wages to here and then did an appropriate application down to what the difference was, where we found differences. And so what we're proposing, we are proposing that we do a mid-year market so that we can not go through. We're hoping to reverse some of that downward trend and be able to attract people that could be coming into the market, some of the students coming back, things like that. And get us back into where we're competitive with a lot of those other wages that we're proposing. It does come with a price tag. We've tried to be as clear as possible. We'd be putting out a market adjustment pool. We're proposing $300,000. The solution does provide, what we're proposing would be a $2 increase to the driver, so that's going to take them from $18 to $20 an hour. That puts us back kind of in that middle range-ish of those competing sectors that we're going with, and we think that we could be somewhat competitive in that and hopefully bring that applicant pool back up. And so that's part of the solution, is to increase that applicant pool. Well, hopefully if we do these market adjustments that we've calculated, we'd also be able to retain the current people that we have and not have some of the experience walk out the door and leave us a little bit short. So I know that was fairly quick. Other questions, because they've been really good so far.
What's ETAs there?
We didn't really compare that much down to there, but I know the last one that I saw last year was $22 an hour, and I know I'm pretty sure they're a lot higher than that because their union went to them, and was negotiating now. They're a union shop. That's a great question. So we showed you that we've been running short staff pretty much all year. So we've got some savings with what's been going on. We're monitoring things now. Obviously, we've talked to you in the past about fuel, of what fuel is doing. We're monitoring sales tax to see what it's doing. There is a possibility that we would need to come to the board with an amendment. It's going to be more fuel driven, honestly. I think even more so than the wages. But there could be an amendment. Do we have the actual money for it? Yes, we do. And we think that we can do this out of, for the rest of this year, out of ongoing revenues. And then as we look into the next year, there's going to be some things that we may have to look at and figure out how we make this work. But we're committed as management to making adjustments wherever we need to be able to be with confidence that we can continue to provide service.
Looks like on their website, $20.94 is what they're paying to start.
Is that after they complete training? Or
yeah, $17 okay. is what they're saying for training. But this, it's got to be old, because that sounds
yeah,
low to me.
That's low. That sounds way lower. I know that's lower than what they're at. But.
Yeah.
They were 22 last year.
Yeah, so the website's old.
Then we started out at the same
I'm not getting day. Really good service here. So
I'm not either. I was trying to do the same thing. <Yeah. laughs>
One thing that I've done that's helped get me drivers through the door, now I don't get quality drivers through the door, but I've done a $3,000 signing bonus. To where we, if they make it through training, they get half of it, and then if they make it for 6 months, they get the other half of it, and that's helped me get bodies, but not great. So that's something that I mean, we may need to do this too, but that might be something you guys.
Sure.
And we're totally open to investigating that. We did run that type of deal before the COVID stuff, and we had some of the similar results where people would come in. Stay long enough to get the bonuses, and then go out shopping for the next bonus. It was somewhat challenging. And at that point in time, we didn't see a lot of success. But we're considering, everything's on the table right now.
Oh, I think we would be able to.
And so that's coming back in as we evaluate what other, and there are some employers out here, we didn't include those types of sign-on bonuses with anything that we were showing here. This was just what their wages are.
So, Curtis, the $300,000 that you want to use as a market adjustment for the remainder of the year, is that for all open positions? Is that for all positions? Because later on you say market adjustments to avoid wage compression.
Yes, and so what we would do is we would take this pool and implement it effective July 1st would be the starting date if the board passed this, and we would make the market adjustments effective July 1st. Now, what it does contemplate is the fact if we're able to keep the staff or even staff up a little bit, we should be able to absorb it within that $300,000 pool.
So that didn't really answer my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So the $300,000, you said if you're fully staffed, you're at 63?
73
drivers.
Yes.
So is that $300,000 going to be applied to 73 drivers, or is it applied only to the ones you have today?
Okay. I'm not sure I can do this. So we have 73 that we're applying for that are the positions that we have budgeted. Mm-hmm. We currently are functioning about 66, 67 is where we're at. So we have about 6 unfilled positions.
Okay.
With the calculation that we did for the 300,000, it would provide all the wages that we would need for those currently filled positions.
Okay.
And it would pay for all the unfilled positions, assuming that we would be able to fill back up to that point,
okay,
and provide the market adjustment throughout the organization to make sure that we don't avoid the wage compression issue that can result. If we were only adjust the bottom wages, you're going to really put pressure in that middle.
Right.
The supervisors, it becomes really hard.
Is it possible for us to somehow reward the people that have been there a long time?
We're totally open to. I think that's a great question to be discussed. We would. I'm open to anything because we do have committed people that have been here for a while, and if that's the direction that the board would like us to pursue, we'll gladly go down that path.
Because I just feel like we, you know, it seems from conversations that it's not working to give bonuses to hire people as well as much as, you know, it seems like it would be more valuable to provide something to those people that have stuck with us.
I think we could come up with a
bonus, raise, or whatever. Give it in a wage rather than a bonus, so that they say, "Oh, now I got $1,500 this week. I leave them now."
Yeah.
But if they give $1.50, an hour.
Like if you did adjustments for wage compression, but then you also did some merit with it for the longer term employees.
We'll take that guidance and gladly implement.
I'm not a personnel wizard, so somebody else might have more information than I.
Curtis, as part of this, do our benefits package attract people? Do we need to do something to broaden our benefits package? I'm just wondering, are people more interested in dollars per hour, or are they looking at a benefits package too that makes sense?
You know, I can stand up here, it's actually interesting because as somebody asked me how long I've been doing this, and I did some calculations and figured out that I've actually been out of college for 30 years now, so I have 30 years worth of experience. And Dave's laughing because he's probably got a little bit more than that, and others have more experience than that. And 5 years ago, I probably would have said, yeah, the benefits can make a difference. The challenge that we perceive right now is the inflationary pressures that everybody experiences, the pressures of the pump. It's the cash in hand that seems to be making a difference. We've seen some of the other places, JBS is a big one, they offered a tuition reimbursement program, but you saw what they ended up doing with their wage as well. We haven't really had a lot of people comment much about our benefits package, about it not being generous and not being satisfactory to them. I will tell you, we just finished up doing an employee survey, and some of that is asking about benefits. We won't have we won't be able to tabulate the results and get them all formalized and narrowed down for another month or so before, you know, we'll probably come to the board and we are today executive meeting present in like August or something like that, or however we want to do that. But benefits typically haven't been one of the driving factors.
But
it's more the competing wage.
But I want to clarify though. Okay. There are employees absolutely that stay for the benefits. So we employ such a diverse workforce, Gregory, that the age range is so wide. So I don't want to give the wrong perception here that benefits don't matter, because for some of our workforce, they very much, it is important for them, right? But to attract the current marketplace, then I agree with what Curtis is saying.
But I think what you're saying, though, is that the benefits package is competitive.
Yes.
So people that want benefits are staying because they would like to have those benefits. But if somebody offered them $3 more an hour, then they may just jump just because $3 more an hour is a lot for people that are making this.
Well, that's what you're finding in the workforce anyway. You see people with less than 5 years on every job they go to.
Yeah.
They move. I mean, it would drive me crazy.
People are fickle.
But people change jobs like a lot of people change their jobs.
It's really interesting that what I went to a presentation about each of the generations and what's important to each of those generations. So we've got the baby boomers and the Gen X's and the Gen Z's and all of those. And it seems that the younger you get, the more they are focused on what their wage is than almost any other factor in their decision to take a job or to move a job.
Is that true in salaried as well as hourly?
It is.
I'll just make a funny little comment here. I had two basic employers through my working career. I started out at Bowling Green regional hospital, started out as a housekeeper and worked my way up to the business office. And my sister, or my daughter that worked for the road department, she said, "You said you out of my job if I was ever going to quit." I said, "I do. I'll come down and get it." She said, "I'm out of here." So I worked for the county until I retired. I retired from the Cache County Senior Citizen Center. I didn't go into it with the thought of making it to that goal on the end. But this watch right here was my prize. And my son said, "Holy cow, Mom, do they still do that?" And I said, "They do. I got a gold watch for retiring from Cache County." And the point I'm making is that kids, my son's pushing 50, and they have a different mindset. I mean, I stayed at the county because I was happy. I loved the job that I did, and I always tell people I stayed there so long I became one. It just kind of happens when you stay. But it was a good place to be. It was a good fit for me. But my daughter-in-law bebops around all over. She's just all over the map. Don't they worry about the retirement? That's one of the main impetus for me was to have a retirement. I guess they don't even give it a thought.
They don't do that. Yeah.
But their mindsets are different, and we have to make, I guess, in Curtis's position, to make adjustments for these goofy kids who could care less. Maybe they don't care what you do right now. Nobody wants to go back to work. They want to stay home and work from home and get paid from home, I guess. To me, that would have been, great for about a day and a half. I really enjoyed the company of my folks that I worked with, but they don't think that way anymore. They don't care about the gold watch because they got one of those sticky-talky things on their desk. So I admire how your thinking probably has to be really flexible and to find a way to entice people to get off their butts and come and drive a bus. I would do that. I would. My Mike always said, "Mom, you guys got to be a bus driver." And I thought, well, I kind of was. I drove a lot of buses a lot of times over at the center, but I don't know if I could do a bendy bus or not. But I'd stick. I'd stay with you until I died, which is probably going to be sure. Interesting process, isn't it? Hasn't it been an interesting century?
Yes.
At least the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I think the challenge that we have is that we have an obligation to the community to provide service. And that obligation is irrespective of how hard it is for us to hire people to drive the buses. Because if we don't have buses on the ground and we don't have people riding the bus, then we have less reason to collect sales tax and less reason to be a transit district. So I think that it's a very difficult challenge to try and address. So I will ask, we did do a market adjustment before. Did it do any good?
It did. We tracked the 6 months following it, and our application pool, we mentioned that it was at 107 for the first 6 months, or at 60 for the first 6 months in 21. The last half of the year, that applicant pool jumped up to right around 150. We saw an immediate jump in that application pool. And that lasted, and then it started waning come the end of November, first part of December, and waned into the first part of the year where we started seeing that.
150 applicants, how many hires did that result in?
We got back up to where we were fully staffed, except for we're still struggling with Saturday service. But we got back up to that. We got up to the level where we showed we were starting at about 67. We did get 70 at one point. So we got up to where we were mostly staffed. Except Saturdays, we're trying to figure out what we can do with Saturdays, because trying to entice people to work on Saturdays is becoming a challenge.
Will we need more bus drivers when we start the microtransit?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, you know. When putting this presentation together, we talked about whether we should include that or not, and we wanted to just focus on what we're currently doing. But yeah, we're going to need additional help, and you need time to train those drivers, right? So, I mean, that's part of this as well, is we're looking at that future of, you know, when we would want to bring microtransit on. I'm going to say this again, I've said it before, though. We're also concerned that we're not going to have buses, though. So I mean, it's those two things right now that are really, really concerning for us about whether we're going to be able to hit October.
And I will be clear, the $300,000 does not include the increase for microtransit. This is just for our current level of service.
Again, if we get to the point that we're really, like, we got buses and we're ready to go, we will be coming back to the board with a proposed what it would cost to do microtransit, right? That'll be a separate thing.
Other questions or feedback? So just for, did you have something else, Mary?
I did. I just had a question because of all of the building that we see going on in the entire valley. It's not just Belden-centric, it's everywhere. Does that increase, and I heard on the radio today, they said that basically everybody that's coming into the valley, it seems like we're getting an influx that happens every so often. But most of the folks that are coming in are, their mom, they grew up here, and they're coming back. Does that increase the pool that the application can go out to those folks? Are we seeing an increase in people that are wanting a job? Or do they come here with the job already? Are they students?
Basically? They're those people that are working from home. Mm-hmm. And they can live wherever they want.
They are.
That's right. That's true.
They are there.
A lot of you know that I moved down to South End. The person that moved in next to me on the one side came from Arizona. He works from home. The person on the other side came from Virginia, that stopped in Farmington for like 6 months while they were figuring out where to live. Came from Virginia, he works from home. And the one next door to that came in to take a medical, the wife took a medical job, and he's a artist and he works from home. Now that's anecdotal, it's not factual, but it just was comical to me that was kind of what right next. And the ones behind me was more interesting, came from Malta. They said they were from Malta, and I was sitting there thinking of some small town in Utah. And I'm sorry, I'm making a joke, but I honestly didn't realize until I talked to them, they actually came from the island of Malta. So there are people that are coming here for a variety of reasons. They're anecdotal stories, but yes, there are some that are working from home, and we hope that some of that will bring in some additional workers, but right now the unemployment rate is 1.7.
So Mary, one other thing maybe to add. So we work with, I'm the one that works with Rumor directly on our public education and outreach, right? And since the first part of April, we've diverted some of that public education dollars to an employment campaign. We've been actively trying to recruit folks, and I get monthly numbers, right? And so when I met with them, I said, you know, how are we doing? That campaign pushes people to our website, so we get a click-through from the social media, like they see it on their social media or they hear about it. They'll click through to our website, so we see that they click there. Then they click through to our employment page, and we can see that click, and then we can see them actually click to apply, right? And what we're looking at the numbers, Rumor saying since April, based on the numbers that we're getting, we should have had 100 plus applicants already. Because they get all the way through to apply and schedule an interview, and then they drop off, right? So again, we're looking at it, what's causing that tail off. And again, Curtis said that we just completed our employee satisfaction survey, we'll have those results. But from what we've seen last year and the previous years, 90 plus percent of the employees are very satisfied with working for us. They feel the environment's good. So that's some of the things that we're saying, you know, that this is a concern.
The jigsaw, isn't it? Jigsaw.
When you have to drop service on Saturdays to the half scale, do you see a number drop as far as ridership?
Yeah, we've been running this. Our Saturdays pre-COVID, pre-loop, we're running right around 2,000 to 2,500 trips. We anticipated with the loop that would probably drop down to around 1,900 to 2,000 is what we were anticipating. COVID hit, but we dropped all the way down to a few hundred when we had real minimal service. And right now we're back up and it's running, on Saturdays, it's running anywhere between 800 and 900. Is about where we're at.
When you change from the 30-minute to the 60-minute, do you see that number drop?
Well, we've only been running at the 60 minutes since the start of the year. Well, since COVID, really. We've never been able to bring back Saturday service. The we anticipate is if we could get back down to the 30 minute, our ridership would probably go up by at least half again, more likely than not double. We'd probably get back up into the worst 1,700.
But Saturday service is much more discretionary. I mean, it's not the weekday numbers that we see.
You're seeing a jump in ridership because of fuel prices?
Yeah, I mean, it's gone up.
Commuting?
Our ridership typically is hovering right around, compared to last year, we're hovering right around 30 to 33%. We've seen as high as 40% compared to last year. It's down, but it's gone down as low as only 24 to 25% higher. So the interesting thing that we just saw, thanks for our great new data, Monday was a newly declared holiday, and we actually saw ridership flatten out compared to last year. So some of those people coming in obviously didn't have employment, because otherwise we expect we would have seen an increase. But the other thing that we saw that was really interesting is we saw a spike of people going down to the Summerfest, and it flooded one of the buses to where we considered it whether or not we should. Did we end up adding a bus onto that for a minute?
Catch-up runs and frequency.
We did some catch-up runs because people were going to be getting left. And so, yeah, we spiked from a ridership and then we saw it immediately jump. And thanks to the new software, that was something we could respond to, and that's something we're looking forward to, is trying to have some flexibility where we could respond to some of those. But obviously our employment numbers didn't have that.
I agree with Jeannie that in order to keep service going, that this is probably necessary. I have such a concern about the leapfrog effect. If we raise, then, you know, who are we taking from with that low of a pull? Where is the ceiling on this as we keep trying to compete, you know, for the same people? And I guess we'll just have a contingency plan that if it crashes, you know, if the bottom falls out. I've already started to see, you know, restaurants shuttering because there's no employees. At what point, I think you even spoke to that, Patrick, that, mm-hmm. you know, things could change really, really fast. And I guess that's the bottom line, is there's always a plan. We can always cut service. We can always cut buses. I just feel really uncertain about the future like everybody else does. But I see that this is necessary for now. Where does the leapfrogging stop?
But to your point, Cecilia, I think it's a valid point. So even the cities, as Curtis said, I meet with the city managers, you know, the cities have adjusted. They're hiring 16-year-old kids to do, you know, their parks and rec, and quite frankly, you know, where they would clean every day, sometimes they're cleaning once a week, or they're asking for volunteers to come in, and so they've reduced service. And so that is a step, to your point, if we can't keep just doing this, there will be a point where we can start looking at the toolbox and saying, okay, what are we going to do? And again, we have that identified, and we can go through and refresh that. But how do we pull back service? And do we go from 30 minute to 60 minute, or how do we, you know, do things? And so again, those are decisions that we might have to make in the future.
That's true. We're glad that you're a conservative organization, that we are, because the money is there. That's a good thing. So.
So what's the recommendation?
Are you ready to vote?
Our recommendation is that you authorize a $300,000 market adjustment pool that we would implement effective July 1st, and that would include a $2 an hour increase to the starting wages of drivers that we'd be able to post immediately.
We'd accept a motion on that.
And so the starting wage would be 20?
The starting wage would be $20 an hour.
For the bus drivers. And then it would just be subsequent $2 an hour raise for across the board.
The other ones are going to be market adjustments based off of what we need to do to keep spacing. And so those raises will vary depending on how we can keep them in line with the markets, to trying to avoid some of the other losses.
And it also is merit based too, Paul. I mean, you know.
And will that include salaried employees as well?
That one's been the debate. There is enough in the pool where the board executive committee could adjust Todd's wage as well into some market alignment. They're not as specified as they are for the hourly employees.
But there are other salaried employees besides Todd.
There are, and there's enough money in there for those salary employees too.
Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion that we adopt the $300,000 market adjustment for July implementation.
I second that. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, I'm not hearing anything. I think, Curtis, one of the things to take away is the board's role in all this is policy. And in the policy, we've had a great discussion, and there's appetite for innovative ways to keep the services going. We rely on your team and your expertise to come back to us and say, this is how we'd like to deploy that, but doing a great job. And I think to the sentiment expressed, we need to keep service going.
Yes, so, amen.
Yep.
Thank you. Appreciate thank all you. The discussion. Let's go to the general manager's report, Todd.
Okay, we'll be pretty quick. So I just want to give you some latest updates. We're still trying to be ready to deploy July 1st. The only thing that's really hanging us up is Apple and Android. So again, we've got our app into them. We have to wait for their approval. There's a process they have to go through. We have no control on that timing. But we've done everything we can. We're ready to go July 1st. All the other stuff has kind of been deployed, right? So the voice enunciators, the passenger counters. Now, there's still a validity process we have to go through for NTD, but we are in the process of doing that. So that's kind of where that's at. Fixed app bus replacement. Curtis kind of briefly mentioned this. I just want to, again, come back. We had some questions on that. So there's 8 fixed route buses that we replaced. And so we just sold those. I think they have until the end of the month to come and collect those buses. We sold those to 2 companies, Powder Mountain here in Utah, and then Transit sells out in California, right? So that's good. We got 8 new buses, which is good. But again, parts and challenges that are with that. So, but great job to everybody. One thing I have to say, though, that I think Curtis might have briefly touched on this last month, but so typically for those 8 buses, what was that, Curtis? I think I had figured out like about $760,000 or somewhere in that range would be our share of local dollars that we would have to pay for those 8 buses because they're...
$500,000 each, right?
Yeah, they're $3.8 million, right?
Take 20% of that, so...
Yeah.
It's... Our $4 million, we've been right around $800,000.
Yeah, $800,000. So, but we successfully got some brand new state money. It was a brand new funding source, and then some other federal money that flows through the state. But what we had to cough up, instead of $800,000, was $15,000. I mean, you know, that's pretty amazing. And again, credit to everyone that's involved in doing this. We all play a role. But again, so when you talk about is service important to us and saving dollars? Very much so. I mean, we're doing everything we can to try and make sure we're being as effective as we can in managing all of this process. So I just want to recognize the team for that. I think that's just...
Let's just say that one more time. We got a $4 million investment for $15,000, right?
Yeah.
Well, does that include the money you received from the sale of the other buses?
No.
So actually,
it's a break even.
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually made money because we got about $40,000 right on the sale of the other buses that we'll get to entertain.
That's
I will just tell you.
Guess we just paid for that $600,000 a year.
But I will just tell you, this is really cool for me. These are firsts in my career. I've been doing this for a long time. You know, a couple years ago, we had Idaho, the state of Idaho, 100% pay for a bus for us. I mean, you know, so these are kind of cool things that I see. And so, yeah, we're innovative. We're trying to be. But we love ideas. We appreciate you guys sharing ideas with us. But we really are trying to find innovative ways to do things to maximize what we're doing. So anyway, I just wanted to highlight that. Just for your information, we have a planning steering committee, which LeAaron chairs. And we're going to be getting that committee going again. We're in the process of updating a long-range plan. So, you know, typically long-range, we're looking, you know, somewhere 5 to 25, 30 years out. We're doing this in coordination with the MPO. They're doing a long-range plan update. UDOT is doing a statewide long-range plan update. And so we've got our consultant, Kimley Horn. We're going to be engaging the cities and doing a lot of public outreach engagement, but really coming up with a more robust plan. In the past, our long-range plan, quite honestly, was pretty squishy. We had concepts and ideas. We're going to make it much more robust, much more visual, and we're going to develop a really kind of planning level cost. Curtis, I have to make sure I say planning level, or else Curtis will twitch over there. These are not implementable costs, right? So, but to where this board, as the policy board, as Patrick has said, when we start looking at things, you can start making some policy decisions about where do we want to be going for a long range goal? How do we want to deliver service? We're also going to be doing a corridor plan in conjunction. This is actually funded by the MPO. We only have to pay about 6% of this plan, but it's to identify future corridors where we would have high intensity transit. So 15 minutes or less service, you know, we might have to have signal preemption, but the land use would be more higher density or more transit friendly. Also maybe it can drive economic development. And so that's something we're doing in partnership with the MPO and our consultant. So just those are some things that are we're starting in the process and kind of excited about doing. So just kind of by way of information. And that's all I got.
Okay.
I have a question. My brother-in-law just started driving when all this come on. He drives at night sometimes. And there's a few stops that have a light when there's someone at a stop. And he says it makes it so much safer to be able to see a stop. What's the possibility of eventually planning to put these lights at stops for driver safety and the people's safety?
Sure. So what we've done, again, is that's one of those things where we try to react to the community's needs. So we try to locate bus stops based on safety as one of our primary focuses. And so where there's street lighting, then usually we rely on that street lighting to light the stop.
I think these are stops that you push a button.
Correct.
When
when
there's somebody there, then they need to stop. Otherwise, they don't need to even stop.
Well, so what we did is, again, we had some members of the community that were in more rural parts of the community that felt like they weren't safe at the bus stop. And so we went out there and we tried to find what was the thing, and we found this light system. And so the intent is just to make them feel safe. About $4,000 a light, so they're pretty spendy. We have about, I don't know, 400 stops or somewhere in that range. So it would be quite an undertaking for every stop. But again, if we hear requests from people, drivers, the public, then we look at that and we say, okay, hey, we have a request here. Because not all those stops are always used. So we try to rely on the public and our employees to tell us, hey, this would be good.
He just mentioned it to me. Yeah. I think it would be a great idea to be able to put these in so that
for sure
people don't get missed and the drivers don't miss a stop.
For sure.
I mean, it's easier for them to see when I...
Especially during the winter months when it gets dark at 5 o'clock. It's hard. Yeah.
Have you guys done, flashlight keychains or something, or people will use their cell phones?
We do. We try to educate and encourage people. We've done different things. We've done a little flashlight that's a bus.
Yeah.
We encourage people to use their cell phones. And the people that do that, it's very helpful for the
driver. What about marketing as far as having somebody sponsor stuff?
Yeah, we can look at that. For sure, that's a great idea.
I thought that's a great idea to be able to for people to be able to use them and make it so easier to see the stuff.
Yeah, well, then I can get with him and we can again tell our employees if you see areas of
need. He says there's like three of them. He told me to drive past.
I think we got four total with our first purchase. So
are these hardwired or
no? They're solar, and the bus. I mean, you push the button and it lights light up for a couple minutes. Great comment. Appreciate that.
Good conversation. Anything else? I did want to say thank you to those that participated in the barbecue, the board Christmas party.
It was fun.
That means a lot to the people that came to it. Jody was kind enough to take me around and introduce me to a whole bunch of people, Ryan and Skylar specifically. But it was great to connect with these people, not so arm's length distant, get to know what's going on from their perspective. And I think that just means a lot. We need to find ways to to make those connections more real, especially as we're talking about, we just spent $300,000 to retain people. Reaching out and talking to the people who make the whole system work is pretty free. So thank you. Thank you for supporting that. That's a big deal to me. So any other conversation? Any other public comment? With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Man, I love that cowl.